Lecture 7 in London. Bright, sunny Sunday morning with everything going just beautiful. And we're talking about values, and we're talking about accomplishing miracles. Well, now, how do you accomplish a miracle in your life? How do you bring about something that you've wished for a long time, you've thought about for a long time, but just doesn't happen? How do you make it happen? How do you bring it about and bring it into fruition? Well, now, Chilma here has a little boy called Ibu Bay. And Ibu Bay is 5 years old. And Chioma knows that if she says to Ibu Bay once, "I love you, you're fantastic," twice, "I love you, you're fantastic," three times, "I love you, you're fantastic," four times, "I love you, you're fantastic," 100 times, "I love you, you're fantastic," 1,000 times, "I love you, you're fantastic," she knows that Ibu Bay will be the reflection of her words. And if she is consistent in her words, never changing, never, "Why doesn't he do this? Why doesn't he do that?" You know, if she has that anxiety and tension inside of her, she cuts herself back to start base one. And Ibu Bay acts like she doesn't want him to act when she says that. You know, but if she really wants him to act charming, beautiful, brilliant and wonderful all the time, which is his nature, then she will call out his nature from him, because that's who he is. No. He can also express a nature other than that if she allows herself to think about it. If she allows herself to think that he's being discourteous or that he is being mean or hateful or anything. You see, the point is, his real nature is that he's beautiful and good. And the other nature is our attitude about him. We think he can be not very nice. We think that he can be inconsiderate. We think that he can be something we, in our adult terms, think that it's the right thing to do. Now, the very nature of Ibu Bay is pure and innocent and good. The very nature of Ibu Bay at 16 is pure, innocent, and good. The very nature of Ibu Bay at 25, like me, is pure, innocent, and good. The very nature of Ibu Bay at 2,000 years old is pure, innocent, and good. Can you give me five?
5,000.
So the very nature of Ibu Bay always is that. Now, you and I call out of his nature what our thoughts are at the moment. And if we see Ibu Bay trip and we say, "You did that on purpose. You're so stupid. You're so dumb." Well, that's not him. That's us. He did trip because he wasn't paying attention. He didn't trip because he wanted to trip. He tripped because he wasn't paying attention to what he was doing when he's walking. He did something improper because he wasn't paying attention to what he should be doing or what he could be doing or what we wanted him to do. Now, if a mother at all times can see her child being ideal, being perfect at all times, being a good child at all times, the child is. And the child lives it, whether at home or anywhere else. Now, so the mother decides that she would like to be a teacher and a professor in a university. Not just a teacher, but a professor in a university. And she wants to be a good one. So she says, "I am a professor in a university, and I am teaching whatever I want to teach. If you want to teach mathematics or philosophy, if you want to teach dreaming, imagination, you know, in universities these days, you create your own courses. You create your own courses out of the inner imagination of yourself." They have a university of chaos, you know, which is a university of total confusion to the observer. But once you take the course and you realize what the university is teaching, it is the greatest balance in the world. It almost goes above music and mathematics. But at the moment, music and mathematics are the balancing agents of the universe. Now, so you take this person, and she wants to be a university professor. So she goes around acting like a kindergarten teacher. Now, how quickly is she going to be a university professor? Not very fast. How do you act like a university professor if you're teaching kindergarten? Well, what would a university professor do teaching kindergarten children? A university professor would look at these kindergarten children already as geniuses, to the original purity and integrity that dwells within them. And this university professor, because he's not back in the kindergarten teaching, he's in this advanced teaching. And advanced teaching doesn't mean that you're so old or you've had so much education. It means he is teaching to your highest potential, your highest opportunity to be who you really are, and who you can be that you may not have expressed because people didn't realize that you had it within you. So, this person, woman, who wants to be a university professor, starts acting like a university professor with everything she does. She treats her child as a brilliant genius. That's not too hard. And as she treats her child like a genius, she realizes that he is unfolding that genius within him. It's not already full-blown, but he's unfolding it. But it's there. And she calls it forth. She doesn't call forth his stupidity, which is not his nature. She doesn't call forth the fact that he doesn't lift up the toilet seat, you know. She doesn't call forth the fact that he doesn't wash his hands and face and so forth like she'd like to have him do. She goes into the bathroom with him, and she says, "Now, you always lift the toilet seat. That's a nice thing to do, because a lady might want to sit down there, and, you know, she doesn't want to have pink all over the toilet seat, and you want to have it nice and dry and so forth. And so, after you're done doing your duty, you wash your hands and dry them nicely, and then you go on your way." Now, this university professor woman, she's not so basic. She expects her child or children or people in her world not only to properly use the toilet seat. You say, "Well, that's so ordinary." No, it isn't. That's part of the training. And to properly use the sink, but you teach him what a master does. When a master finishes at the sink, the master leaves the sink like he found it. If he found it dirty, he doesn't leave it that way. But if a master goes in and finds the sink all beautiful and dry and clean and nice, he leaves it dry and clean and nice. Not because he has to do it, but because if he opens the door, he closes it. If he follows the rules, he follows them beautifully. Not because the rules are there, but because he has accepted to be part of the society in that level of consciousness. Now, as the mother or teacher or something expects the child to fulfill these particular things, it happens very easily. It happens very because you just expect it, and the child intuitively knows what you expect. You don't even have to tell them. You say, "Well, I got to tell them." No. You let them know what the rules are by your example. Whenever you go in the bathroom, you use the toilet in the proper way. Whenever you go in the bathroom, you wash your hands in the proper way, and you take a rag that you got underneath the sink there to wipe it dry and clean, and to faucets dry and nice, and polish them, and then you go on your way. Now, you don't say, "Son, this is what you should do." You know, you just do it. And he copies you. He copies you. If you do anything that you're not proud of, and you see your child doing it, you can be sure it's because you did it and he copied you. Yeah. So, back to the university professor again. So, we'll say this lady wants to be a university professor, and she's teaching kindergarten. So, she begins teaching the kindergarten children as a university professor. She begins to act like a university professor. In everything she does, she acts like that which she aspires to in her heart. And she doesn't know how a university professor acts, but she does. Because she's gone to school, she's gone to college, she's gone and met some of these people, and they're not always the ideal, but she's met them. And when she's talking to a university professor about the theory of relativity or something like that, they're talking about the theory of relativity. They're not talking a child's play or a child's talk. They're talking, and not adult talk, but they're talking the language of the theory of relativity, which is the language of what? Of mathematics. And so, is our mathematics so difficult to understand? No. And could a child understand that mathematics? Easily. If you understand it and you believe they understand it, you will see them doing things which reflect the talent, the knowledge, and the ability of mathematics. And therein, this woman who wants to be a university professor is already being a university professor in everything she does. And so therefore, everywhere she goes. Now, I have a son, Mr. Wonderful. He's 50-some years old. And he never cared about education, never cared about schooling. He loved flying and stuff like that. And he was flying. Well, he deeply is into flying. But he has a fault. And his fault is he's a deep thinker. And whenever you talk to him, he sounds like a university professor. He is profound. His thinking is just wonderful and beautiful, and he is really expressing himself in a marvelous way. And people who hear him, they say, wow, what a brilliant mind, what a brilliant person. And this is what they think of Ibu Bay too. They, what a brilliant person. So then you listen to him, I mean, you read what he has written, and sometimes what he has written is not like a university professor, or maybe it is. He writes phonetically and things like that, but you can understand it. But there's a charm, there's a brilliance, there's a flow in what he does. Everyone who reads him just delights in reading. You've read it, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, where his walks with his dog, you know, and it's just really charming. And so, but my point, he studied out of books. He didn't study in universities for his training of himself in flying and the technology of flying and so forth, and building airplanes and all the things he's doing. And what he's doing is so exquisite that the federal government at their highest level, the Federal Aviation Authority, those men who check him out, they buy his planes because they feel they're made so beautifully, so wonderfully, so innocently, so freely, so perfectly, you know? And he is being an exquisite being on his area of concern because he loves it. Now, the university professor does not do anything for anybody else. What does the university professor do? They do it for themselves. When they walk into class, they say, now here is my point of view. Here is my understanding of this. This is where we stand. And the students might say, well, we're supposed to be learning what other teachers have taught. Yes, that I've given you the textbook for that. You go read it in the textbook. But here in class, I've only got so much time to spend with you. I'm going to tell you my point of view, my understanding. But you may not be so bold. You may just say, this is the way it is. You know, which it's okay too. So you're up there explaining all of these beautiful theorems and quantums and all these things that are blowing their mind. But you are doing it with such simplicity, such innocence, such charm and such magic that they right away listen. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I told you about my history professor at Marquette University. An older guy. I think he even had a beard. And he taught in the largest theater of the university. You know, big round theater with the chairs going all the way up to the ceiling. His class was packed. Every course that he taught, no matter whether it was a first level, third level, fourth level, whatever he taught. And he taught them all. And you go into his class, and he says, okay, put your books aside. Put your paper aside. You know. And then he would weave the story of that area of history he was talking about so charmingly, you sat there dumbfounded and just bemused so fully. And then what happened? Bing, bing! The whistle would go, the bell would go. It was time for class to end. And he says, okay, see you next week or whenever. You know. And did you know what he taught? Oh, you did. Did you memorize it? Mentally, you just were there. You were living that experience with the professor in what he was sharing with you, and you felt, wow-wee! And so his examination, as I've told you, his examination was, okay, put your stuff aside, put everything aside, right, take a sheet of paper, on the sheet of paper, put your name, you know, and your course number. Now, no cheating, I trust you. Who was the author of the textbook? You know, and you know, you read a book, you may not always pay attention to the author. You think the professor is the author because, I mean, he's teaching the course, but he's not the author of the textbook all the time. And so, who is the author? If you failed, then you got a 100-question examination for your test, which was quite intensive. Well, happily, I knew the author because I'm of a habit of reading the author, reading the preface, the prelude, the introduction, all the stuff that comes before, because that gets you fired up for what's coming in the book and gets you on the level of how that author is writing that book and how he's expressing himself. And the same with the class. What does the professor do? He says, put aside your books, your papers, your stuff. Now, here we go. We're ready to take off for outer space. And we did. That whole building, that whole classroom, that whole auditorium that he had was mesmerized by his beautiful presentation and the wisdom that he had and the magic of the words that he chose and the illustrations that he chose. Not that, obviously, he couldn't take everything from what he was teaching, but he chose the most significant, poignant ideas that put across what he was trying to, what he was doing, what he was wanting you to remember. And he put it across in such a way that you could not help but remember it. That's the wrong thing to say, you could not help. But as you listened to it, it became part of you. It became part of your remembrance. I remember things he taught, and it's just beautiful. Now, it's just ancient history. It's just old erased levels of history. But I remember it. And I remember one teacher I had in high school. She taught English, and she taught typing. Well, now, I remember the typing more than I remember the English. The English was good, because she'd get up there and she'd do the soliloquies of Shakespeare and so forth, and we would all laugh. She was good. She was good. We never forgot. Some of us, even I took advanced courses in Shakespeare because of her. But the typing, I was only able to get 6 weeks of typing out of her before I don't know what the reason was, but she wasn't there or something. But in 6 weeks, she taught us the foundation, the basics of typing, as a teacher, as a professor type teacher, so beautifully that the rest of my life, I'm a very excellent typist, very good. The rest of my life, I was a typist in journalism, in my newspapers and magazines, and in my writings, and in my book writings, and in all the things that I do. I sit down at the typewriter, and my fingers dance over the keys. I want to type every time I say typewriter. And, you know, today, typewriter. Now, and the computer keys, they just sort of you kiss them, you know, and they respond. It's so lovely. But I remember the days when I was hitting those keys, pounding away, making that print on the paper there. But and the magic that we can do with the computer, that we can do as we flow into its inner depths. And if we say, I want to emphasize this, click. I want to de-emphasize that, click. Or I want to change this, click. No problem. And then if you make a big goof, you just redo, you know. You redo what you did wrong, and it's back. But you see, a professor, like this woman who taught typing to me, I'll never forget. I have a love for typing that she helped me develop inside of myself. And I don't know if the rest of the class is like this. I never questioned it. But for me, it was a love of typing. Just typing. Just typing for typing's sake. I subsequently took that love further and used it in my work. a love for typing. And my history professor, I had always liked geography, but geography is very, static. It's not people. And so when I took his course and was learning history, wow, the geography made sense. You know, Genghis Khan and his travels and all these other things, and the philosophers and Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, they became real people, you know. And this, to me, is what a professor does. This, to me, is what a real teacher does. A real teacher is one who lives the philosophy or the teaching that they're sharing with their students. So if the students get so excited, they want to read more. They want to do extra reading. I want to know more about that. I want to know more about that. And that's good. That's good. Nowadays, you can pull it up on your computer, virtually everything you want. And that's why having bigger screens make it even nicer, you know. You can read in a larger type on there, which is so great. And then you see the pictures. But you can accomplish anything. But start right now, saying, Ibu Bey is an excellent person. Ibu Bey is the ideal child. Ibu Bey is 5 years old. He is a magic boy. Ibu Bey is so fabulous, it just boggles the mind to even describe it. Now, we say, Chioma. Chioma is a university professor. Now, she may not be hired for that, but that's how she teaches. That's how she thinks. That's how she lives. She thinks and lives and expresses as a university professor, as a bona fide, qualified, paid university professor. And her level of grade teaching at the moment may be on a different level, but it doesn't matter. She teaches her students as though they are university students. What does he do? She do? She teaches them how to be excited and be challenged by what it is she's teaching them. But it won't work. It won't work because first she has to be excited herself about it. If she's going to teach mathematics or history or anything, and she's not excited about mathematics or history, she's nothing, We talked to a number of people who were telling us about their life experiences, and they were doing things that they weren't really excited about. Well, your uncle friend, okay. He was telling us that he was doing different things that didn't excite him. And then he decided there's nothing in life that he was going to participate in except things that excited him. And he didn't have anybody to tell him he should be a doctor or not be a doctor, he should do this or not do this. He just chose out of his own heart to do it. And he didn't choose to be the best. He was the best. There was no lesser or better. He was the tippy top. The only thing he chose to do was to do whatever it was he chose to do, and he did it exquisitely, He was the university professor teaching at the university level, even in the kindergarten. Because a lot of university professors have to do research, and they do research on, for instance, the art of teaching kindergarten. Well, now, what is the art of teaching kindergarten? The art of teaching kindergarten is for the teacher first to love themselves so completely, so wonderfully, that when they go into their class, they are pure love. And the class melt in their request for them, or in their sharing with them, or in their demonstrating for them. The class just says, I just love to go to Miss So-and-so's class, I just love to. And what is it they love? That person is self-confident. Now, that person can accomplish anything they want to do. You can have several classrooms of teachers teaching the same thing, having the same grade levels, and each being right next to each other. And one is not very nice, one is ordinary, and one is exquisite. And the exquisite class is a class that really turns you on. Have you ever seen the video Spelling Bee? Well, you'd like it. In Spelling Bee, this girl is a brilliant girl. And very brilliant. And she has a lot of little problems that keep her from doing things. And then at one point, she wanted to go into spelling bee. Brilliant, just absolutely brilliant. And so she knew words, and she knew this, and she knew that. And her teacher, or her school principal, said, I would like to have you meet so-and-so. So she met the man, and the man listened to her, because as a favor to the principal, because he really didn't want to do it. The principal asked. And the principal wanted him to mentor her to help her go into the upper levels of spelling bees. And so she came to him, and she wasn't on time. She came to him, and she was disrespectful. And he said, I don't need to teach you. If you don't think what we're doing is important enough to be on time, and if you don't respect yourself, it's not me you're disrespecting, it's yourself. I don't want you. I don't want to waste the time. I've got too many other wonderful, exciting things to do. Well, they got together, and they worked together, and she realized what he was doing was important. And so then he said to her, I want you to take this book, this, I'm not close on all the details of it, but I want you to take this book which teaches you or gives you all of the background of where words come from, of where the words are, what language they come out of, the Latin and the French and the German, and so of how these words are born into use in language, and then how they are born cross-language purpose. And she says, I want to learn the words. No, I want to just learn the words. I don't need to know that stuff. And she said, yes, you do. So he taught her. And after a while, she cooperated. And then when she cooperated, she found knowing where these words came from was so extremely important that the history, the background, the method on which the words were created and developed into history and into language was so exciting that she just absorbed it night and day. And so she came down to the line, and she had to learn a lot of words and do a lot of things, and she is now picking up where she should have been going all along like that. And so she wanted her mother didn't really care. And so she tried to get her brother to help her a little bit. And her brother said, you know, this is girl stuff. And then he was a street gang kid. And so the head of the street gang, Tuffy, you know, riding around his car, he saw the brother with the sister. And he says, who's she? My sister. What's she doing? Well, she's in a spelling bee. She is, huh? Ever write any poetry? The kid says to her. She says, yeah. He says, well, I wrote a poem when I was in school. Yeah, that's a good poem. I want you to read it. So he gave her, he happened to have a copy, ha ha ha. So he gave her a copy to read. And her younger brother said, I'm going with you. And the gang guy said, no, you aren't. You're staying to help your sister. You help her read those languages. You help her card it, you know. You give the word, and she gives you the definition of spelling and all that kind of stuff. And so he did. But pretty soon, all her neighborhood friends were helping her. And pretty soon, all the people in the community were helping because she was so sincere and just so good. And she went to the finals, of course, and did well. Now, it's a story that is so beautifully done, so profoundly done, because the teacher... The professor, he was a professor, he'd been teaching in a university, and why his own reasons changed, death in the family or something, but it caused him to, you know, lose weight. But she helped him get back on the line, and he helped her. But he taught her what he loved. He taught her how to love words, how to really get excited about them and live them. And I believe this is what a professor does. A professor, and using the words in that relationship, a professor teaches people what they love themselves, whatever area of teaching they love. and all of their students do not become like the professor, but they become far greater, far more wonderful than the professor can ever be, because they're taking the teaching they're getting, plus their inner intuition and so forth, putting it together and coming up with a magical self that they never dreamed they were. Now, anybody can be a master. Now, Ibube sits here and he works on the computer, 5 years old, and he's playing games on the computer, playing solitaire and everything else. He's playing these games where you puff out these people who come along and have a cloud of smoke and stuff. But he's not only doing that. He's playing that game. He's got another game going alongside of it on the computer at the same time. And he's got the cellular phone with him that has games on it. And he's playing a game on that. And he's talking to his mother, saying, "Mother, look here, look what I'm doing, you know." And to his aunt, "Look what I'm doing here." And they say, "Well, I'd like some coffee." "I'm not coffee, but I'd like something to drink, you know. I'd like this or that or the other thing." And so they bring it to him. And he's doing all of these things at the same time. And he's not spilling anything. He gets up and jumps off the davenport. And he's leaning over like he should hit his head on the floor, something terrible. And he springs up like a jackrabbit, you know, just perfect and beautiful. He has grace and charm and magic in him that allows him to just do anything. But other people might look at him and see him clumsy. And for them, he'd be clumsy. But I look at him and see the genius, the magic, the magician that's in him. And for me, he shows it, you know. And for his mother and his aunt and so and his world, he shows it. Because that's what they expect, that's what I expect, and that's what he is. But as I say, he could be anything, whatever we expect. And if we're going to expect him to be our lesser nature, which is truly what we're doing, our lesser nature, if we're going to treat him like a kindergarten teacher would treat him, that's great. Now, let's just look at the word professor once. A professor is a person who is educated, academically usually, and their education is in a field that they dearly love, that turns them on. They feel just so simpatico with the field that they're in. Now, that's an educator, or that's a professor. The two are rather synonymous. Now, if you ever want to be a professor, first you fall in love with what you want to profess. Now, what does a professor do? A professor professes. A professor practices what they believe and who they are. And when they practice this, the whole world sits up and looks and says, "Oh, tell me, Chioma, when I say the word Einstein, what do you think? You think a dumb cuff? You think something stupid? You think somebody who forgets to put their pants on? You think of somebody who is not too interested in their field, but, you know, works in their field?" No. Mr. Einstein was like Ibube here, interested in everything, interested in all these things. But because mathematics is the glue that keeps the universe together, mathematics is the essence of what the foundation of the world, the foundation of all knowledge and all wisdom and all beingness that is, the building blocks of the universe, you might say. When Einstein worked in mathematics, he played an instrument too, not tremendously well, but he played it for his enjoyment, and it was good. He spoke with the President of the United States about the atomic bomb, recommending that they not use it as a bomb. They use it as merely atomic energy. That's why he worked on the committee to help bring it about. As an energy, not as a bomb, not as a destructive weapon. But when you give such power into the hands of somebody, they're going to use it however they feel to their advantage. And we don't need to argue that. So to be a professor is you're really excited about what you're doing. You're really excited about the field you're in. You're excited about the people that you're in. You're excited about the attitudes of the world that you're in. It's really wonderful. And anyone can do it, but they don't do it primarily because of one simple thing. They don't do it because they're not persistent. They're not consistent. They're not sticking with whatever it is that's their dream. Now, when Tiger Woods was a little boy, he played with his dad's golf clubs and stuff and liked it. And his dad taught him. Apparently his dad knew how to play golf. And so he taught him. And his father was a rather remarkable man, but he never did. He didn't practice what he was teaching, you know. But he taught Tiger, he said, keep your eye on the ball, but be before the ball, not with the ball. Where are you putting that ball? Wherever you mentally want to put that ball, see yourself absolutely doing it, and the ball will be there. Now, when a university professor keeps their eye on their subject matter, on the direction that they want to go, what happens? They accomplish it. If they ever lose sight of where they're going, what happens? They are valueless. They're not exciting. They're weak. They're nothing. You know, in any university, in any organization, there are top people, top professors, top teachers, top administrators, top everything. And some universities are more desirable or more toppy-top than others. And what makes the difference? What makes the difference is, well, let's just back off for a minute. What made the difference in Chrysler? Leo Iacocca. When he took over as chairman of the board, CEO, when he took over as head of Chrysler, they were heading down the skids in very, very rapid fashion. And he, with the magic of his self-conviction and the magic of his belief in Chrysler, he got the federal government to give him a large loan, which they paid back in 3 years. Unheard of in industry and business. Usually the government never gets paid off. And they just conned it. They stole it from the government. And they do it. And they don't think a thing about it. People get scholarships, and they get them from the universities, and they say they will pay it back. And, of course, the government is paying for the scholarship, and they don't pay it back. And the government doesn't go after them because they don't have time to bother. You know, they say you should pay it, but they don't. That doesn't stop you from having all the benefits. But it's not the matter that it should be paid back. It's the matter that you are dealing with what? What are you dealing with? Principle. Sybil said it this morning on the telephone. She wasn't so reluctant to say it. I said, what are you teaching, Sybil? Principle. And so, Leo Iacocca taught Chrysler principle and made them absolutely fantastic. And others did the same thing. Others do the same thing. Really top-notch CEOs go into a company, and the company's making maybe $3 billion a year, you know, and they want to increase it. So they're up to $30 billion a year after that CEO has been there for 3 or 4 years. Well, now, does that CEO deserve to be paid well for directing that company through that? Because the company doesn't mean anything to him. It's merely a vehicle in which he's expressing the principle of how to do these things. Well, there's a lot of talk about CEOs being paid too much and stuff like that, and that's only jealousy. Jealousy on the part of the people who aren't getting it. But the genius of the CEO is utterly fantastic. Now, can the CEO sell his people on the idea of supporting the company? You bet. Do the people back up the company and feel that they want to work for that company, that they want to do things for that company? Yes. Now, why is it? Because he is like the professor who loves his subject. The CEO absolutely loves his subject. The CEO absolutely believes in the company. And the CEO oftentimes just say a dollar a year, because already he is wealthy, because he thinks wealth, lives wealth, acts wealth. But it's not a matter that he should receive a dollar a year. It's a matter that he loves the company, and the company's going to succeed. So if we want to do anything in life, if we want to go anywhere or be anywhere or have any experience, the way we'll be a success is when we're persistent, consistent, when we follow through with whatever dream or goal we have, and we forget the fact that we may not know mathematics, and we want to teach mathematics because it excites us. We think, what a wonderful thing to know, or philosophy or anything else, but let's say mathematics. And so then we begin to study mathematics. Well, now we don't study mathematics like it's taught in books and in school. We study mathematics as a principle, as a concept, as something that is the glue of the universe. And as we study it in that frame of mind, what happens to us? We get excited. We get excited. It's like the story I told you about the creation of the universe, the Big Bang Theory. And in the Big Bang Theory, this professor, he was a scientist, and he's telling everybody about the Big Bang Theory. And he's telling everybody how it works and what it does and the manner in which it is to be successful. And when he does that, everybody says, ha, 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 ha. So then he told the story to his kids. And everyone thought it was so charming that they said, well, why not? Why not? Why not have that be the way it is? And when you have it be the way it is, then what happens? There it is. You can become so infatuated in mathematics, become so charmed by it, and yet never have done the ABCs of mathematics with the multiplication and all the other division parts. You know. Now, how can you do that? Well, you do that because you love yourself. And when you love yourself, then you do all those things beautifully. But if you don't love yourself, what do? Then you complain, and you complain. You say, other people are getting a better chance than I do. Other people are getting a better opportunity than I do. And all that happened to you was you didn't reach out and take it. You know, that's for yourself, too. If you don't send out the resumes to place, but now, really, when you start acting like a professor, when you start acting like a professor in whatever field you want, mathematics or whatever, people will come to you. But you are acting like a teacher. You're acting like an elementary teacher. And because you're acting like an elementary teacher as a disciplinarian of your children, instead of an inciter of their minds into whatever field you want to share them with, you know, that's what you are. You're just a disciplinarian. Now, how good a disciplinarian are you? And is that what you want to be? No, no, no. Well, then create your class as a class full of eager students to hear and learn all the knowledge that you have to share. And the knowledge sometimes is the discipline of putting the toilet seat up, you know. The knowledge is the discipline of following the program of the home and following the program of the school and feeling that you don't have to drive over the limit because it's fun to do it. And when you do that, you get into all sorts of trouble, you know. Always do what the program calls for. Always follow the rules. And when you follow the rules, then magic happens in your life. And when magic happens in your life, then what happens? Then you are the happiest, most wonderful, most satisfied person in the universe. And you, what is making you happy, is to let your mind soar into all the areas that you'd like to be in. And I imagine if somebody gave you an atom and an atom smasher, you'd smash that atom and figure out how to retain that energy and use it in a beneficial way for humanity as yourself, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I thought so. Very good. Think on these things. Because that is the fundamental principle, and that is what makes the world go round, and that is what really brings us results in our life that are just utterly unbelievable. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, Miss Gemma, you are a magic lady, and I will henceforth address you as Professor Gemma. I go around telling people that you were a banker, which you were, and in the bank you were uninspired, and you left banking, but you loved mathematics. And so then you decide, I'm going to be a mathematics teacher. And so you went to the university and you got the courses and you did the work at home, and in a four-month period you did a four-year course in mathematics, and you were top of your class, and you are now chosen as one of the outstanding mathematicians in the field of math. But you're teaching it on the level that you're teaching it. Now, your next step is to perhaps go to Santa Clara University, California, and be a professor there. And why would you want to be in that area? Because that's the area where the thinkers are, where the think tanks are. That's the area where the computer wizards and people like that dwell and work on projects and come up with utterly magical things. And it's mathematics that puts them together, and mathematics that reveals them, and mathematics that expresses them. And that's where you are. So, I see you living in your lovely home in Santa Clara, which you have a six-bedroom house, all paid for, whatever number of bedrooms, with your swimming pool and your tennis court in the back, and all the other good things like your Uncle O.K. had, you know, and maybe two or three houses for guest houses for relatives who might come and visit, or me. And then you would just be living in paradise, but you don't need anything. Everything is there. Now, if you feel comfortable owning it, that's good. If you feel comfortable just enjoying it, that's good. But whatever you want to do, it's all yours, and it's all there, and it's now. And if the universities here in London, in Britain, find they want you back, they will offer you a proper salary, and you think, well, I got to sell my house. Don't worry. You get what you want over here, and whatever equity you got in that, we'll apply it to that, and you're in. Done. And you say, wow. And so then down in Nigeria, they want to develop the university down there, and you say, okay, I'll come down there for maybe a week every month and inspire the students in mathematics and be outrageous in your imagination. And watch how that outrageousness is reality and exciting. Not bad, huh?
Not bad. Very good.
Very good. Well, now it's time for lunch. How about that?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Ibu Bey, are you ready?
Lunch.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yes.
Loud.
Yes.
Ho ho! Beautiful. I think we got the message. I love you.
I love you.